you look at what the natural resources are in and around you, you know, and whether that's through foraging or acquaintances and, lucky enough to find a little bit of space that you could grow something on, or a friend who's got some, a little, they might have a farm up the road, but you're able to maybe, barter some honey for some compost and things like this. You start to build that network around you to maximize the potential. And if it's just window boxes and if it's just, pots on a patio, so be it, or even on the windowsill. But it's just about taking those little steps all the time. And then something that sort of really came up in our last podcast that we put together was that if you do these little things, when an opportunity arises where you do have a chance to maybe, get half an allotment, or someone says, "Could you help me with this bit of woodland?" It's you're not coming at it from a complete sort of new or novice point of view. You've built some skills based on small things,
Yeah.
and then you get, as opportunities arrive, it doesn't seem so big because, I've done a bit of this before, and so you can sort of really maximize your own potential as well.
Hi guys, I apologize there was no podcast on Wednesday, but I'm going to make it up to you now because I'm going to release an extra one on Saturday. So today, and forgive me, it is a re-release of a previous episode, but it is our first ever conversation with Alan and Mike from the Urban Homesteading UK podcast. And it was a two-part conversation over two podcasts. So I'll be re-releasing the first part today and the second part tomorrow. So we're up to our full quota, if a little bit late. Please forgive me, I'm moving house at the moment. I'm doing lots and lots of work on the new property, and I'm absolutely up to my eyeballs in it. I'm working at the new house from around 8 in the morning to around 10 o'clock at night every day. And yeah, it doesn't leave much time for anything else, podcasting included. So please forgive me. Hopefully, we'll be back to our regular schedule next week. We'll have to just play it by ear. It's a 2-week process that this house move is. But yeah, please bear with me, guys, and I'll speak to you as soon as I can. Cheers.
Hello, and welcome to the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I'm Carl from selfsufficienthub.com, and I'm here to talk about all things self-sufficiency, all things homesteading, and about how we can reduce the gap between our consumption and our production. Sustainability and food security matters.
Hello everyone, welcome to episode 98 of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I hope you're all safe and well. Today I'm talking with Alan and Mike from the Urban Homesteading UK podcast. Mike reached out to me a little while ago and we had a fantastic conversation over the phone that eventually led to this recording. Now, on this occasion, it's quite rare, but we didn't actually have a topic to discuss. We were just having a chat around all the different things that we do, and I hope and think that comes across in the conversation. So you might hear a little bit more of my voice than you might usually in the more interview type recordings that I've done. This was more of a three-way conversation. I certainly enjoyed it, and I hope you guys do too. We ran on and ended up talking for over an hour, so I've split it up into two episodes. This is going to be part one, and part two will be brought to you next week. So without any further preamble by myself, I give you Alan and Mike.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Alan and Mike, do you want to say hello and just tell us a little bit about how you came to have the Urban Homesteading UK podcast?
Hi, I'm Alan. I'll go first. Shall I, Mike? So I guess it was just an idea we had at the start of lockdown very early on about, how we might do something to help other people, that lots of our friends and family and people have been asking us how we do some of the things that we do. And so it was kind of just an idea of how could we get that out there with, I guess, the minimum of fuss. And then, were there other people that were in a similar position, at the start of lockdown, where they were perhaps struggling to get hold of things and thinking, well, what can I do to support my family and make sure that we're all right through all of this? Just a way to try and get that message out there, I guess. That's from my perspective. What about you, Mike?
Oh, Mike appears to have dropped out for a moment there.
Okay. All right, well, I'll carry on then. So I asked Mike if he's coming on with me. He's a very good friend of mine. We've known each other for a good while now. Very similar ideas about things, and so it was kind of, he was the obvious person to ask if he'd come and do it with me. And I wanted to get a UK perspective. You know, it's kind of, you go and you listen to a lot of homesteading and self-sufficiency type podcasts, and I think at the time I was on Howard Thornborough's Modern Homesteading podcast and listening to that a lot. And I asked if anybody knew of any other podcasts, and I believe, Carl, you'd started out about the time I was asking. I think you were on episode maybe 2 or 3, something like that. Very, very, very early on for you.
Yeah.
And sort of really interested in what you were doing and wanted to put a different spin on it by having the two of us involved and having sort of our conversations and keeping it, you know, we're just ordinary fellas living in ordinary houses with families and wives and kids and all that. And sharing our experiences and hoping that people could identify with it, I guess.
I think he's been a bit modest, Alan, there, because he's definitely the driving force behind things, I have to say. So he's been a little bit modest, but no, we've both shared sort of a lot of stories and skills, but you know, we've been learning from each other for a long time, so it just seemed like a natural progression for it to take off. And Alan's much better organizer than I am, so you know, I just sort of tagged along a little bit, but he's definitely been the driving force behind it, without a shadow of a doubt.
Well, as a listener and a genuine fan, you know, I love the dynamics of the two of you, and you know, I am a genuine fan of the show, so it's an absolute pleasure to have you here chatting on my show.
Likewise.
Oh, bless you. Thank you. So I'm just wondering if we should start at the beginning, and how did you come to be doing the sort of things you're doing? Is it something that has come about through the lockdown, or is it something that you've grown up with? What's your sort of journey into?
Well, Mark, you lead the way.
Okay. Well, I mean, I grew up in Essex, in a rural part of Essex, and I've always been sort of in love with the woods and everything like that. So certainly around Epping Forest, that's where I was brought up. So the natural world has always played a massive part in my life. My mum's an extraordinarily keen gardener, you know, fabulous gardener. But throughout things, yeah, really, it was just that closeness to natural rhythms. That's the easiest way I can describe it. And then as I sort of grew up and got into, you know, my own life where I was living and had my own house and had to choose where I wanted to live, I always wanted to live in the countryside. And I've always been really, really preoccupied with rural pursuits. And it definitely started there for me. So beekeeping and kind of like some of those old traditional crafts, really, you know, whether it be wood carving and walking stick making or you know, learning how to hunt rabbits and things like that. All of those things were just important to me. Now, I didn't have very many people to show me those, you know, certainly... a lot of my learning came from books and talking to people and experience. But that's something that Alan and I talk a lot about, is that, you know, if you talk to people, you find stuff out, you know. So very much for me, it was about finding things out like that. And then about 10 years ago, I kind of stumbled across some more American prepping sites, if you like. And I liked some of that, but it was all a bit gung-ho and a bit AK-47 for me. So, I wanted to find sort of almost like an English kind of way of, you know, finding my way through that, or something which fitted in more closely with how I am, you know, a bit more gentle, I suppose. But certainly a lot of that was tied in with being a father and some of those sorts of things. So, you know, it's a bit of a hodgepodge, really. That's how I sort of came to be here. But then through meeting Alan, you know, he's very much the horticulturalist, and, you know, I've learned so much from him, and hopefully, you know, I've been able to show him a few things, and it's just about sharing that knowledge, you know, and having that experience, which I can then hand on to my kids, hopefully, and inspire them that, you know, that they can have control over some of the things they want to find, produce, consume. You know what I mean? It's about having choices rather than just feeling that you've always got to be a consumer. You know what I mean? That's where I'm at in a nutshell.
I 100% know what you mean, and I relate very strongly.
You're not
to
from
it.
Essex. You're not from Essex, are you,
Carl? Shortly, Alan. No, you can probably tell by my accent. I mean, I just relate so strongly to a lot of that. So my background, you know, I've always had that sort of connection to the outdoors as well, and I've not had anyone really to show me anything. So that's one thing I'm lacking, if you like. I don't really have a network of people, be it family or anyone else, who's doing this kind of thing. It's all very much what I've forged myself from book learning and online and stuff. And I also, I've mentioned on the show previously that, you know, that there's a lot of crossover between homesteading and prepping, and the word prepping is a turnoff to a lot of people, but there's a hell of a lot within that community that is actually crossed over and useful to draw upon. And much like yourself, the feeling that is derived when you hear, you know, survival prepping and apocalypse prepping, that's not really what it's about for me. But at the same time, being prepared and having those options and knowing that you can derive the things you need from the things around you is just something that fills me with a great sense of ease and
I think me and Alan certainly both share that. I mean, one other thing I wouldn't want to ever forget, though, is that, you know, through my family and where, you know, I've got a close family, There is this link to the past, and certainly that's very important. So even though I didn't have directly someone in the family who might have showed me how to keep bees or how to carve wood or, you know, those sorts of things, there is running through all of it a connection with people who have passed on little moments or little nuggets. And a lot of those are in my family. You know, I'm very aware what my grandfather and my Irish relations do and did, and bits of that come out in me. You know, they're all butchers, and so, you know, I feel a kinship with them when I, you know, when I go out and I'm lucky enough to get a rabbit or deer and things like that. And then on my other side of the family, we've got some carpenters and things like that. And so, you know, there is a little bit of line and thread which I'm really keen on being part of. It's like a kind of journey, not just for me as an individual, but some of those things that in some way or another have been handed down and passed down. A bit like old tools. That's what I kind of like, think about it, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, go on, Al. I've waffled on well enough that. There, Al.
I was wondering when you were going to give it a rest, mate. Anyway, so I guess for me, it's slightly different, really. I grew up in the sort of mid-70s. I was born in the mid-70s and grew up through the early 80s. And my family, I lived in the countryside. I was born in Sussex. I live about 5 miles from where I grew up, one of the nearest towns. And as a kid growing up, everybody in my family grew vegetables, just what I did. It was very much about the fact that we were a working class family. You know, Dad worked for the water company by the time I was about six. Mum was a hairdresser. We didn't have a lot of money. So it was about how do we supplement what's going to be on the table? You know, what can Mum and Dad do? And they were fortunate. They had a great big Bramley apple tree in the back garden. And I've got vivid memories of the wasps on the windfalls at this sort of time of year as a kid. And then going to my grands and seeing her veg patch and my other grands and seeing her veg patch. And so sort of growing up in that environment where people were growing vegetables because it's just what you did. It's just natural. And I suppose for me, the driving force for me was very much as a teenager. I like to eat food. That's just, you know, no choice, but I like to eat food. And I like to eat good food as well. I don't want to, you know, any old junk. I'm not a big fan of going out to fast food. Occasionally we'll do a takeaway, like most people do, but I'm not a big fan of that fast food. I want to eat proper food and I want to eat scratch cooked food. And ideally, homegrown scratch cooked food. So I started growing stuff. And it started with a few little bits. I think I put a grapevine in at my parents' place when I was a teenager because I wanted to grow grapes to make wine. I was one of the few at the university who always had wine in his cupboard because I'd made it myself. It was there, you know. You drink a bottle of that before you went out. You didn't have to spend very much. That was just what you did, you know. So for me, sort of growing up watching mum and dad do that, and dad would take us fishing and that sort of thing. And if we caught the right sort of fish, I remember him bringing a pike home one night and having that for dinner and that sort of thing. It's just kind of what we did. And as I got my own place, I've grown more vegetables. I've kind of extended that and pushed the boundary. And I guess now I'm probably teaching my mum particularly about how to, you know, grow or how to produce or preserve or whatever it is. But it's always for me been about producing the food. It's very much about producing for the kitchen so that you can eat nice food and you know where it's come from, you know what's gone into it.
Yeah, and you touched on a few things there, really, for me, when you were talking about, you know, you want to eat, you like eating, and then you like eating good food and with good provenance and everything else. And it all just sort of, it all ties together for me because I think the deeper you dive into this way of thinking, the more the benefits kind of overlap on one another, and that reconnection with where food comes from, and then the spending time in the natural world with the natural rhythms, and, you know, spending time fishing. There are people who spend a lot of money to go away on fishing holidays and things like that, but you can do it and at the same time be providing for your family and providing this really high quality food and reconnecting with nature. And just the way, by adding things into what we do, it just compounds all the previous benefits that we already had, and it just gets better and better over time.
And I always find, you know, I'm always looking to add a new string to my bow. So it's kind of, what am I going to do with all these courgettes that I've grown? You know, or there's this hedgerow with enormous numbers of blackberries. How am I going to make the most of that opportunity? And so you've sort of learned new things. And I think probably Mike and I met in 2009. And I suppose since then we both kicked on. I mean, in the sense that at that time I'd just about got an allotment, and I'd grown a few bits in the garden before then, in every house that I'd lived in, where the opportunity arose. And even in the second floor flat, I grew tomatoes in the windowsill in a window box, you know. Find ways to make things work for you. But when we met in 2009, I think we both really kicked on, kind of egg each other on a bit and teach each other new tricks. And I know Mike's taught me beekeeping, and hopefully, you know, I've been able to return the favour in some areas as well. Yeah, absolutely. And that keeps us going. Keeping sort of inspiring and encouraging each other really is of a real benefit for both of us, I hope.
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt.
Hi guys, I'm just very quickly interrupting the show to say please consider supporting it. If you'd like to consider supporting this one-man operation, there's lots of ways you can do it. One of the easiest of which is just to talk about it, to share it online on your social media pages or with friends. By growing this audience is one of the best ways that we can actually ensure that the show is sustainable. If you'd like to support it more directly, then please consider becoming a patron. You can do so by going to patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. By becoming a patron, you help me to achieve things that I'd love to be able to do in the future, such as buying better equipment to increase the quality, allowing me to pay myself some time to spend on the podcast, again increasing the quality of it, and also paying for things like transcription and show notes. If you would like to do that, please do consider going to patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. Thank you. Everything you do to support this show is really appreciated. So you guys are sort of very much based on urban homesteading, hence the name of your podcast. I know that I'm very, very lucky to have a really big garden, several acres, and I'm under no illusions that that makes a lot of the things I do easier and makes a lot of the things I do possible when it otherwise wouldn't have been. But at the same time, whenever I'm speaking on the show or creating content for YouTube or whatever it is I'm doing, I'm very conscious that almost all the things I'm doing, anyone can do, maybe slightly differently and maybe tailored to a different way of doing it. But the fact that someone doesn't have a 7-acre garden doesn't have to be a barrier to entry to homesteading, does
it? Absolutely not. No, we both push. I mean, neither of us got very big gardens. That's the whole point of it, really, is that, you know, people asking us, how do we do what we do? And there, you know, there's ways, and we talk a lot on our podcast about finding opportunities, and Mike mentioned already about sort of making relationships, and that's how things get done, isn't it? You know, it's all about who you know, isn't it, in life, typically, and finding people who help you along the way to do things you want to achieve. But it is very much doable on, you know, I've got a regular family. My garden's about 60 foot long at the back, and, you know, the front garden's longer, you know, reasonably long, but you don't use your front garden for growing stuff typically. And I've got a very, very normal sort of family home, I suppose. And Mike's very similar, I think, don't you, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, the difference between the two of us is that Alan lives in a town, but he has a resource of the sea because he lives near the coast, very near the coast. Whereas I live in, really do live in the middle of the countryside, in the middle of nowhere, in a very, very isolated village, you know. Well, it's not even a village, it's a hamlet. I can walk out of my back door into woodland and hedgerow and fields, and I'm off that way. So, you know, it, like all things, and on your site, however big, however small, you look at what the natural resources are in and around you, you know, and whether that's through foraging or acquaintances and you know, lucky enough to find a little bit of space that you could grow something on, or a friend who's got some, they might have a farm up the road, but you're able to maybe, you know, barter some honey for some compost and things like this. You start to build that network around you to maximize the potential. And if it's just window boxes and if it's just, you know, pots on a patio, so be it, you know, or even on the windowsill. But it's just about taking those little steps all the time. And then something that sort of really came up in our last podcast that we put together was that if you do these little things, when an opportunity arises where you do have a chance to maybe, you know, get half an allotment, or someone says, could you help me with this bit of woodland? It's, you're not coming at it from a complete sort of new or novice point of view. You've built some skills based on small things. And then you get, you know, as opportunities arrive, it doesn't seem so big because, you know, I've done a bit of this before. And so you can sort of really maximize your own potential as well. That's definitely where I'm at with it anyway.
And you're in a position to take advantage of those opportunities that do land on your lap.
Absolutely.
You?
Yeah. Because it's not so daunting, is it? If someone says you've got this allotment now, but you've already grown some things, well, you know, maybe I could have a go at that. And I do think that there's a lot of inertia in some people because they're a little bit, you know, they do get a little bit worried about, well, I might not know what I'm doing, or I might mock up. And I think that that's a bit of a, you know, a kind of, it's a part of some of our modern culture, and our own tendency sometimes is that we do hold back a little bit rather than, you know, grasping the nettle and having a go at something, even though we might muck up and make loads of errors. I make loads of errors.
That's the original question, though, Carl. The idea of sort of urban homesteading is that, that Mike's house, for all the fact that it's situated where it is no bigger than the, you know, regular, probably even a new build house, is it, mate? Your garden's...
No.
By most people's standards, pretty small, I would suggest, if anything.
Well, it's way smaller than yours, isn't it?
Yeah, it certainly is. But you still make it work for you, don't you? And I know you take advantage of your location. And again, although I live in a town, I've got access to the South Downs within sort of 10 minutes walking, so I can get out there and again, make opportunities. So we're not talking about massive cities. We're talking about sort of small town urban instead, I guess, is kind of the way we look at it. And make the most of those opportunities that you have got, rather than looking at the fact that you haven't got any opportunities.
So if you guys were to be speaking to someone and they were saying, listen, I'm a fan of your podcast, I'm interested in the whole genre, but it's not something that I'm sure really where to take my first steps. I live in a small house with a small garden and I'm not sure that I've got the capacity to do it. Where would you point people to start? What would you direct them to make a start with?
Make a loaf of bread. Really simple. Yeah. Bake a loaf of bread and get a decent bit of butter. I'm lactose intolerant, but you get a decent bit of butter, whatever you want to put on it, and go from there. And that, for me, it's about starting in the kitchen. It always has been about, you know, bringing things into the kitchen to try and use them. But, it, you know, it might be if it's, I don't know, Mike, you're probably going to start about growing something in a pot in the back garden, I guess. Would you? Is that where you would...
No, I'm not actually. No, I've been giving this some thought. And I remember when I moved into my house here, actually, the first thing I did was I bought an ordnance survey map and I started to work out what was around me. So I actually think that if it was this time of the year, I'd go and pick some blackberries if I could still find and eat, or maybe find some wild crab apples or something. I'd go more about that connection with discovering things outside. Yeah. If it was springtime and there are lots of things you can grow over the winter, but I think that if it was springtime, I might be thinking more about, you know, getting some pots and thinking about some real basic seeds in pots on a patio or something like that. Definitely, you know, the joy of doing things yourself. But if it was this time of the year, I'd be encouraging people to get out on those walks, you know, find a bit of woodland or find a hedgerow in a field and see what you can find out there. And, you know, just start to experience some of those seasonal changes and rhythms that we've been talking about. Definitely, for me, that would be definitely where I would start.
That's awesome, because I've asked several people that question and I don't think that I've had either of those answers before. And I've given answer to that question before when I've been asked, and generally I always go with, you know, a small pot with something growing in it, and that's usually the answer that I get. So I'm really interested and excited to hear that, because we sometimes forget that being self-sufficient and being a homesteader isn't just about growing your own food, is it? There's so much more to it than that.
Very much so. I would say that having those links with the seasonal changes, but also what is around me, you know, the awareness of what is around you, you know, wherever you live, you're part of a landscape. And even in a real urban landscape, you know, I've lived in cities and things like that. There are still opportunities there. There are still pockets of green spaces. There are still, you know, places that you can get out to on a train or a bus where you can utilize some of your skills in order to help you, you know, live a more self-sufficient existence without a shadow of a doubt. And that's before we even start touching on, you know, some of the knowledge that we've got about consumerism now, you know, about where, you know, the things that we do have to buy, about making sure that they're environmentally and ecologically safe, you know. So it's just part of this massive puzzle. But certainly for me, when you buy that ordnance survey map and learn how to read it and you see where you are and then you see all these little green dotted lines that go in and around your space, you start exploring that local area and then seeing what's there and building up your own forager's map or whatever it is. I don't know. That's what gets me going anyway.
Yeah. Well, I'm a huge forager personally. Yeah. It's a huge part of what I do. Yeah. Just as a person, you know, it's something that I love, and the fact that it also puts food on the table is fantastic. But there's so much out there, not just wild edibles, but there's so much out there to connect with, and as you say, Mike, to learn your area.
Yeah,
it also opens you up, as like you were saying before, to these other opportunities that may or may not arrive.
Oh, can I ask you a question? Because you've obviously,
please.
We spoke the other day about the fact that you've obviously got this opportunity on the land that you're on currently. What was the first thing you did when you moved in there?
Oh, God, the first thing I did.
I imagine there was quite a few things.
The first thing we did actually was try and just get to grips with the size of it. I suppose we were in the opposite boat to a lot of people because we hadn't planned to live here. We found ourselves living here with this 8-acre plot literally within days of it even being a seed of an idea that it might happen. And I also had absolutely no pretensions towards self-sufficiency. We didn't really grow any of our own food where we lived before. We kept a few hens, but that was about it. So for me, it kind of worked the other way around. It was the fact that I found myself as custodian of this land that made me then, I suppose it worked very much like Mike saying, I had this little plot and I didn't need an ordnance survey map because it was all mine. I was drawing my own map and I was able to sculpt it. But I connected with every single square meter here. And I suppose I felt that the opportunity I was given was so precious that I didn't want to waste a single square meter. And that kind of led me to, well, I went into overload, and I'm the opposite of a lot of people. So I started 1,000 different things knowing that 880 were going to fail. But that, you know, so within the first year, we'd dug a vegetable plot. We'd expanded our chickens. We'd got goats. We had pigs. I dug three ponds and far too much. But I suppose that the thing that I started first that has been most consistent has simply been the annual vegetable bed.
Mm-hmm. I suppose
that's the one that, like, from day one, it was really obvious what that was going to be, where it was going to be. And that plan has been quite consistent and hasn't really changed. Yeah. Everything else has evolved much more than that.
Sounds like the real answer to the question of where do you start is somewhere. Doesn't matter where, does it? Because actually, as you know, as we've said on our podcast and certainly we've spoken about before, Carl, it's very much about the journey, isn't it? It's not about the destination. So it doesn't matter. Absolutely. There's not a start and a finish point. There's no defined beginning and end. For me, it started when I was 2 or 3 years old and I'm watching my parents grow vegetables. And my journey started way before I'd even realised it had started, actually. And that may be true for many other people. They may not realise that they've already started on that journey, just by doing some very simple things like cooking a meal from scratch in the kitchen. You're getting some decent vegetables from the greengrocers or wherever you might go, the farm shop or wherever. You're bringing those home and making them into something delicious. You've already started the journey. You've just not realised it yet. And so I suppose the answer actually is just whatever floats your boat, find somewhere to start and just have a go.
This episode of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast was brought to you by our patrons. You guys are awesome. If you'd like to support the show, there's lots of ways you can do it. The easiest of which is just to like and review it wherever you get our podcasts. You can also tell somebody about it, whether that's on social media or just face to face with a friend who you think might benefit from it. But however you support our podcast, we really, really appreciate it. If you'd like to become a patron, please consider doing so by going to patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. However you support the podcast, it's listeners like you that make all of this possible. Thank you ever so much for listening, and I'll speak to you really soon.